Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I am Neil McCready. Russell Johnson, Rivals.com, RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst, is here as well. We'll get to Russell in a minute. We'll talk a lot of recruiting, obviously, because that's what the show's about. Get you caught up on what's happened in the summer. Get you ready for what's coming in the fall. Kind of catch up on where the Ole Miss class is today and talk about some other topics as well. Before we do that, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. It's in Crenshaw, Mississippi, billyspecans.com. They've got everything. You're getting ready to get your tailgate set up, whether it's for high school games on Friday, college games on Saturday in the Grove, TV parties. Maybe you're making the trip to Houston. You want some munchies for the car. You can get all of that at billyspecans.com. The cinnamon spice pecans, the toasted pecans, milk chocolate pecans, dark chocolate pecans, white chocolate pecans, chocolate amaretto pecans, my favorite, the chocolate Grand Marnier pecans, all of those right there you can get. If you just can't decide which one you want, you can get a gift bag assortment of 5 8-ounce bags. It's a 5 bags for $72.50. Fantastic. That'd be a great order. They've got more than pecans as well. They've got the Southern Pecan Toffee, the fantastic cheese crispies, the pecan brittle, coffee cakes, whether it's the cinnamon pecan coffee cake, the blueberry pecan coffee cake, jellies, sauces. It's all there at Billy's Pecans, billyspecans.com, or 1-800-624-7404. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and he will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. You can ask for a couple of quotes. He'll send you that. You get your quotes, and then you can shop it around, or you can go ahead and do what I've done or what so many other podcast listeners have done, and that's let Corey take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. And at the end of your deal, right before you finalize everything, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on this podcast, the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans, or mention any of our family of podcasts, the Oxford Exxon Podcast, the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, or the Greatest Pod in the South presented by Cathead Distillery. Any of those, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. Again, 662-257-1900. So, Russell, how was your vacation in Ohio? I know it was good to go home and see Emory and catch up a little bit.
It was definitely good. It was good to be home. I found myself wearing pants a lot more than I normally would with the weather up there. I came back down here, and it kind of felt back like home with the humidity being back. This morning wasn't too bad, though. But like you said, it was really good to see Emory and to spend some time with her. We went to her first baseball game, so that was fun.
Who'd you see?
Indians and the Yankees.
Who won? Who'd you see? What pitch? What pitcher?
I don't remember.
Kluber, Bauer?
I was too busy with her. It wasn't either one of them. But it was good. It was good. She enjoyed it. She kind of likes baseball, but she doesn't like the Yankees. She thinks that the pinstripes don't belong in baseball.
Well, I disagree with that.
I do, too. Yeah. It was just funny to see her
have a conversation about that.
To formulate opinions. And, she's become so much of a person, even just since I saw her last couple months ago. It's just crazy to see.
Glad you're back. Glad you got back safely.
You were on the road quite a bit too.
I have been the majority of the month of July. I was gone.
Yeah.
So it's, kind of catching up still.
Right. Yeah.
So, I know we owed everybody a soft verbal. We told you we were going to take a little break. So we're back. Let's touch on a handful of things. We'll get back to mailbags and such maybe next week after that. Kind of wanted to just do a reset. Podcast.
Yeah, you definitely need to, especially with 24 commits in July.
That's crazy. So what are your takeaways kind of from the dead period?
Well, from the dead period, it was right before the dead period came up. There was such a scramble for momentum from all the different programs in the SEC. And it even kind of got into the dead period where schools were still taking commitments from prospects, especially Ole Miss, you know, landing as many offensive lineman commits as they did. It just seemed like it was never going to end. I mean, it started before the dead period, and it went into the dead period, adding as many offensive lineman commits as they've had. And you know, as soon as – obviously now the dead period's ended, and the rush for momentum again before it end the – what is it? The quiet period now. Before the quiet period ends, everybody's scrambling to gain that momentum again and to obtain commitments and to, you know, kind of at that point when the dead period starts August 1st, what they'll do from there is they'll kind of reset their board, kind of like what we're doing with the show, and they'll reevaluate targets, they'll figure out who they need to see during the fall, and they'll be a lot more picky and choosy with offers than they were in, say, June, when, you know, kids were camping and getting offers that may or may not even be committable anymore. So that was a main takeaway. And then obviously you've got, you know, Alabama back at number one in the country. Everybody, you know, there's going to be a fight in the SEC between them and Georgia, and kind of seeing that continue to evolve has been interesting, at the least.
So the recruiting calendar going forward, as we sit here, it's July the 26th. You're going to hear this probably on the 27th. Fall camps are about to open. High school practices are either have begun or are really about to begin. Well, how does that change the recruiting calendar?
I mean, there's going to be a lot less recruiting. I mean, there'll still be recruiting going on, you know, like on the phone and in text messages and DMs on Twitter. But there won't be any visits from August 1st to August 31st. There'll be a new dead period beginning. And from there in September is when the evaluation period begins, when you'll start seeing coaches on sidelines at high school games. And like you were saying, high school practice, I believe in Mississippi, starts on Monday. And I know some schools up in Memphis have already kind of started practicing. In Mississippi, they've been practicing, but I'm saying they get pads on for the first time, and you know they kind of get that feel for the first time, which is going to be interesting, especially a lot of the area schools, one to be exact, in Oxford, they have a lot of question marks going into the season, so it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do. But like you're saying, getting back on topic with the recruiting calendar, you know, the dead period will start again on August 1st, and from there, you won't see many visits. And then once the season starts again, that's when visits will take place. You'll see the unofficial visitors. And that's kind of when the potential unofficial visitor ban, that's when it really gets to be a potential problem.
You've been watching. I haven't watched it. I know you have been watching it. I've heard some things about it, none of which are very flattering. The last few years, Last Chance U was at East with Buddy Stevens and company. This year, it's in Kansas at Independence Community College. Malik Henry is there. What are your thoughts? What's been the feedback?
I mean, Ole Miss. I mean, you have to say they dodged a bullet when they declined to, you know, really further pursue Malik Henry. I mean, Malik Henry's got all the talent in the world, but the off the field problems. I mean, not just with him, but with several of, you know, the high rated recruits who end up at these kind of places at JUCOs. The off-field problems kind of just take over, and for him to have that highlighted, not just on the show, but just in general, has become a problem for him, to the point to where I'm almost positive he's going to return there and play again this year. Obviously, you know, he talked quite a bit about how he didn't think he was supposed to be there. He thought he was too good to be there, and you know, he just showed the personality that Ole Miss has been trying to avoid. And I think several other programs throughout the country, I mean, even Group of Five schools declined to, you know, really pursue him as far as they could have. And really, the Last Chance U, in my opinion, it belongs in Mississippi. East Mississippi, you know, what they were able to do, I mean, Buddy Stevens looks like a preacher compared to this guy they've got on now. Nothing against Coach Brown, but, I mean, having that kind of language and, you know, the way he talked to the players and stuff, I mean, it can cause some problems, and it kind of sheds a negative light on JUCOs.
Sheds a negative light on football,
yeah,
on coaching.
Right, exactly. I mean, you've got complete opposites when you've got him talking about football and how he thinks about it and trying to get kids out the hood and this kind of stuff. And then you've got Jim Harbaugh talking about how all great men play football. There's just two polar opposite coaches. I mean, one will be more successful than the other, but that's besides the point. So where, you know, like I'm talking about with Malik Henry, there was others, Raheem Boyd, there's last chance you, you know, if it was to return to Mississippi, obviously it's not, it's going to be in Kansas again. It's really helped that program, but these kids, what they're doing, they're obviously going to the school not to play for Independence, Kansas, and not to do this and not to do that. They're going there to be on TV. And when you go there to be on TV, you've already got a me first attitude, and you've already got an attitude in which your recruitment comes over the success of the team. And that's kind of, like I said, shed a negative light on JUCO football and in general on the recruiting process. If I were to choose, you know, a Mississippi school for this year to put on Last Chance U, it would have to be between, well, it couldn't be Northwest. I mean, Northwest has several options and several players, but, you know, with Tarikius Tisdale probably ending up at Ole Miss in early August after finishing up some classes, I would have to go with Northeast. I mean, Northeast has a talented defense. They obviously added Dede Bowie, who's going to play offense for them, former Ole Miss cornerback and four-star signee from Morton. So, I mean, that's what I would choose. If, I know you didn't really ask, but that's what I would choose if, you know, you had to pick. But the really weird thing that Kansas does that Mississippi doesn't, which I kind of want you to touch on a little bit because I'm not exactly sure if I understand it, is Mississippi limits the out-of-state players that you can add for JUCO. And Kansas has completely eliminated that.
Yeah.
Do you think that's to kind of keep the Mississippi players who may or may not be the smartest tool in the shed home to play? Or
no, I think it's to give them opportunities. If you were to open it up, maybe fewer kids in Mississippi would get the opportunity to go to get their college education begun. I mean, you know, that's more and more kids are starting, not athletes, just students are starting their college careers at community colleges. So I think it's just an opportunity to make sure those more Mississippi kids get the opportunity to start on their road to a college degree. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. I think if you were to open it up and turn it in, let's keep this real. The percentage of people who really care about who wins a junior college championship is a very small percentage of the populace. I couldn't tell you who won last year. I couldn't tell you anything, and I'm in the field. So it's, you know, that's designed to give kids opportunities, and that I think that's what that is.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that, like you said. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, for so long Kansas had limitations, and I think they kind of just let it go. And, I mean, with eliminating those opportunities from those local kids, it's just – it's a penalty to them. But it benefits – number one, it benefits the TV audience. It benefits the JUCOs. And I think it also probably brings them more money into the state of Kansas.
All right, mentioned junior college recruiting in Mississippi. Let's go there. Who are some of the guys as this season gets ready to go? Who are some of the guys that you're keeping an eye on heading into this season who could conceivably end up either on Ole Miss's radar and or their signing day forms?
Yeah, well, right now Ole Miss has, I believe, five commitments from JUCOs. Depending on whether or not you count Tisdale, it could be four. They've got Jonathan Haynes from Jones County. They've got, like I said, Tarikius Tisdale. They've got Sam Williams from Northeast. Linebacker Terrence Edgton, who I kind of thought was actually could be a better prospect than Sam Williams when I saw him last year. Watching him emerge, he's currently committed to Houston, but watching him emerge and, you know, continuing to develop has been big. There's an offensive lineman at Northeast. His nickname's Tree. I'm not really exactly sure what his actual name is, but he's someone I would keep an eye on. Not that Ole Miss needs any more offensive linemen, but, you know, with him and then also on the offensive line in Mississippi, you've got LaQuinston Sharp, who has quite the offer list with Florida, Mississippi State, and several others already in the picture. And just continuing to watch that happen, Pearl River had a quarterback who was pretty highly regarded, and what ended up happening with him is he was injured and going to miss part of the year anyway, so he decided to enroll at Memphis early, so that kind of takes him out of the picture. Really, from a JUCO standpoint, it seems like it's going to be a pretty level field. And not that, like you said, anybody cares about winning, but it seems like it's going to be because, you know, East is kind of not hit a reality check, but they're not getting the big name guys that they were getting before. Obviously, they have Messiah DeWeaver, the former Michigan State quarterback, who everybody is very high on, especially in Scuba, who I would actually, if I was Ole Miss, I would, you know, potentially think about taking, especially if you see Corral this year and he doesn't seem like he's going to be ready to be the guy the moment Jordan leaves.
Yeah, because right, as of right now, Corral has to be the guy this time a year from now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see Tisdale pushing him much.
You still think Tisdale ends up on this signing class, though?
I think there's some doubts. Obviously, it depends what happens in December and after the season. You know, what changes take place or don't take place, and whether or not certain pieces stay.
Okay. So maybe Russell, you've cut out the lattes, you've put in those Curly Q light bulbs, and you're brown bagging your lunch to work, but it still feels like payday keeps getting here a day or two late and a few $100s short. So try this. Give State Farm agent Wally Morgan a call and tell him you'd like a free discount double check. It's a line-by-line review of your car insurance policy to make sure you're getting the discounts you deserve, like 10% for being a good driver, another 10% if your teenage driver happens to be a good student, 17% for simply combining your car and home policies. Add all those State Farm discounts up, and it's pretty easy to see how you could be saving hundreds of dollars a year. So get started today by giving State Farm agent Wally Morgan in New Albany, Mississippi, a call at 662-539-7062, because being there to help keep more of your money in your pocket is why Wally Morgan is here. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Discounts may vary state to state. All right, let's talk about DeJuan Black a little bit. I understand that he might be on the move before he gets to college.
Yes, yes. There are several rumors about him potentially transferring to IMG Academy and finishing his academic career. You know, obviously that would have to go into play with his eligibility or potential eligibility or his non-eligibility. So, you know, with that, that's something that, you know, he's considering. He's obviously visiting the University of Florida this weekend, as I mentioned on the message board at rebelgrove.com this morning. You know, that visit still is planned to take place, and I believe he will arrive either tomorrow or Saturday. But I think that's going to be a productive visit for the Gators, and I expect Mullen to continue chomping at the bit to be able to get him in their class.
Where do you think he ends up? Bottom line, that's what fans always ask. Where does he sign on signing day?
Where does Black sign?
Yeah.
Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Okay.
Junior college. But going to IMG Academy for a minute, the problem with schools like that, I mean, you can list off several highly rated recruits, you know, 4 and 5 stars. You have two kids from Memphis who transferred there in Shamar Nash and Eric Gregory, who left Memphis Central. And it just seems like these kids, when they go to IMG, they don't end up panning out in college. Do you think it's too much of a college-like atmosphere, or do you just think that it's just the way IMG does things?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to answer that question.
Because Shea was there too, wasn't he?
Shea was there for a year.
Yeah.
I don't think IMG changed his status as a player. The only thing is it's a transition. You know, it's a. I don't know enough about it. I wouldn't want to send my kid to a place like IMG for his senior year of high school. I think there's something to be said for having some sense of normalcy, not turning your kid into a little football robot.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Let your kid have a senior year.
Right. Let him be a kid. And I think what IMG kind of does is it also forces, like you said, the adjustment period. It forces the adjustment period a year early. And when kids figure that out and they figure the schedule out, because I'm pretty sure at IMG they basically live, breathe, and sleep football and eat. That when they do that what they're doing is, you know, they're creating this college-like atmosphere to the point to where they get to college, they think they've got it all figured out. And when they've got it all figured out, that they're, you know, making mistakes. Obviously, Malik Henry, like I said, he was at IMG. He transferred, I believe, from California. He was at, I think, 3 or 4 different high schools. He's probably a bad example. But that you've got several other highly rated recruits from IMG. I mean, they even had their own media day. I believe it was yesterday or the day before. for all of the highly rated recruits that they have on their team, and they can't even get schools in the state of Florida to really play them. So it's just something interesting that I've seen, and I think there's also a chance that some, you know, some, not ragtag, but, you know, some off-brand replicas of IMG are going to start coming up. Obviously, you've got charter schools. You've got Freedom Prep in Memphis. I mean, you've got schools like that, and then you've also got schools like Hattiesburg, the public school in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, adding these quality transfers and being able to do that and get them eligible. I think in the past 2 months, they've added Hakeem Vance from Lewisburg. Obviously, there's some family ties there with his the head coach being his uncle. But then you've got Jaron Handy transferring there from Perry Central, which is obviously eye-raising for several reasons.
Okay, so here's the question we get at every we do a mailbag. It's always in there at least seven times. The latest on N'Kobe Dean.
I mean, he remains a must get for Ole Miss. A must get. Ole Miss's class, at least in several fans' eyes, some coaches, and some people around the program, the class will be a failure if they don't sign N'Kobe Dean, whether or not they sign the entire rest of the top 20 in Mississippi. That's how highly they think of N'Kobe Dean and what they think he can be as a player. Obviously, he was named as a member of the Dandy Dozen, and he gets all the preseason accolades. But he's going to be at Florida State this weekend. He's been with his dad in Florida. That's a situation I'm kind of interested to see how it evolves, because you've got, obviously, Cam Akers there. You've got and you've also got Laurel offensive tackle Charles Cross, who's going to be visiting with him. Obviously, I don't know if they know each other, but, you know, having several Mississippi kids on campus at the same time can do no harm, especially with a recruit as highly rated as N'Kobe is. After that, I could see him taking a visit to Ole Miss before the dead period ends again. But I think it's going to about that time for him to narrow things down a bit further. I still think right now Ole Miss is second or third. It goes Georgia and then possibly Alabama and Ole Miss are tied. But he's already used his official visit to Alabama. So it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen there and how they plan on staying in the mix, if they're going to get him for an unofficial visit or, you know, how they're going to do that, especially with the way I believe they moved up the Mississippi-Alabama game where they moved it back. So that could switch things up to where he's able to take an official visit that weekend before the early signing period, which is what Alabama was freaking out about, that he wasn't going to be able to if he would have made the state title game, which is going to be hard enough anyway for Horn Lake.
So in the end, and I know you're asked this all the time, if you had to predict today, and National Signing Day is not today, and anyone who holds you to this prediction today is simply being unfair, because I'm putting in all these caveats that if it were today, it is not today.
That is correct.
If it were today, and he had to sign today, where would N'Kobe Dean sign?
The University of Georgia.
No question.
No, there was no hesitation there.
If you had to project, do you think he signs in December or does he wait till February?
December. I mean, he's all about academics. He wants to get on campus. He wants to get acclimated. He wants all of the things. He wants to participate in spring practice.
It is impossible to completely project, because unless you have a crystal ball, at which point let's get the hell out of here and go to Vegas and make us some money.
That's right.
If you had to project, and again, I'm giving you every caveat because I hate the people that hold.
Yeah, I've stopped doing projected classes because of that.
Yeah, as you should. I was going to tell you, just stop.
No.
But if you had to project in your mind based on some of the things that might or might not happen, coaching staff changes, that kind of thing, where would you, you had to put that check on something as to where he would sign, where would you put it?
If I had to put money on it?
Yeah.
I'd bet on Alabama.
Okay. Where does Ole Miss rank?
Third.
Okay.
And then you've got Florida State. You've got LSU looming. And then Mississippi State thinks they're in the picture. I mean, they could possibly be, but.
From a perception standpoint, if Ole Miss does not sign N'Kobe Dean, there's going to be a lot of gnashing of teeth. How fair is that? If it comes to that, how fair is that to Matt Luke and that staff that is in Oxford right now? How fair is it that there would be they had to get N'Kobe Dean for this class to be a good one. They didn't get him. It's not a good one. Is that going to be a fair assessment when people do it, or is it ridiculous?
I mean, it's not a fair assessment. It would be more of a par for the course type thing, because what was Matt Luke hired for? To everybody, for the in-state ties and for, you know, being an Ole Miss guy. And if you've got an Ole Miss guy and an Ole Miss-centric staff currently in Oxford, and you don't land N'Kobe Dean, yeah, there's going to be some pushback. And it might not be, especially with being a linebacker recruit, it might not be justified to call it a failure of a class, you know, like I was kind of mentioning. But with that, N'Kobe Dean is a potential program changer for a program like Ole Miss. Places like Alabama and Georgia, they've got linebackers lining up at the door waiting to play for them. At Ole Miss, you've got linebackers. You're desperate for linebackers to the point where you're pursuing grad transfer linebackers who couldn't even start at a Power 5 school. I mean, you've got things like that to where that the linebacker recruiting has become so critical and almost a kryptonite for Ole Miss, almost as much as recruiting in Memphis has, but we won't talk about that. But like you said, I mean, that would be considered a failure in several people's eyes. But I don't see that being justified, especially if they're able to, you know, shore up the holes. They'll have a JUCO linebacker and Sam Williams, who will have 2 years of eligibility. He'll kind of soften that blow. Signing Eric Jeffries from Lafayette High School, that'll soften that blow. You know, getting linebackers who are SEC caliber is critical, and there's no doubt that N'Kobe Dean does that. But to act like he is irreplaceable would be ignorant.
Let me ask you about this. You talk about late additions to the roster. I reported on one earlier in the week when you were driving back from your time off. Brant Lawless, a 4-star defensive lineman from Nashville. He was signed with Tennessee. Basically, Tennessee doesn't have room for him.
Yeah.
They've squeezed him out. People keep saying, what's the deal? What happened? That's it.
Right. You know, everybody wants the backstory. They want to fill a narrative. They want to.
There's not much of one.
Right. Not at all.
So what's the latest with him? And then you mentioned a possibility of a grad transfer linebacker from Texas whose name is escaping me right now.
Edwin Freeman.
So give me the latest to your knowledge. And there might not be a whole lot latest on both of those guys.
Okay. Well, with Freeman, Ole Miss reached out to him just kind of see if he was interested and, you know, what the interest level would be and if he might, you know, like to visit and kind of go from there. There's been no offer given out yet with Freeman. Freeman signed as a safety at a high school, moved to linebacker, and from what I've seen, obviously, you know, I don't watch much Texas football, but it seemed like he was going to fight for playing time, but it seems like he kind of wants more. The other schools in the picture there are more of on a smaller school level. There are some bigger name schools that are working to get in the mix there, but Texas may or may not. Well, actually, I don't know if they can block where a grad transfer goes. So really, with Edwin, it's going to come down to where he can play. And obviously, Edwin could play at Ole Miss. And like you were saying with Lawless, the situation there with the grades and making the grades and, you know, Tennessee not having room for him, that has created an opportunity for Ole Miss in the city of Nashville that they haven't had in. Well, I mean, they did sign the Knox brother this past year, and then obviously the other Knox a couple years ago, a walk-on. But the success in Nashville has not been there in recent years. And to be able to, if they were able to get Lawless, especially if Jefferson isn't able to make it, you have to think that they would hop on that and be able to do it. In terms of Lawless formulating any visit plans or anything like that or a decision timeline, I haven't heard anything with that.
He told me on Monday that he was in the process of setting up some visits. The truth is he was shell-shocked on Monday.
Yeah.
He was this is where I always feel like I'm launching into speech mode, and I don't mean to. Imagine this being your kid. I mean, I have a high school junior who's about to be a senior. She's about to start her senior year in a couple of weeks. She's about made up her mind. Imagine her going through months and months of, okay, I know where I'm going, actually moving there, getting started in her classes and such, getting acclimated, making some friends, learning your way around a new town, all of those things, and then kaboom! Hey, you're not admitted anymore. You gotta go. And not only do you gotta go, you gotta find a new place.
Mm-hmm. And fall camp starts in how many weeks?
Yeah, let's take the football out of it.
Yeah.
I want to take the football completely out of it. Because we have this tendency, me too, to look at these people like little football machines. And they're people. And so you're saying, okay, well, you got to do all this. That's a shell-shocking thing. He wasn't prepared for this. I know for a fact from people in Knoxville, he did not see this coming. He did not know this was coming. This was out of the blue. This was a shot from behind, okay? So we're taping this on Thursday. The fact that he doesn't have a visit schedule all lined up is not indicative of anything other than there's a certain degree of shock to absorb. There's also the logistics physically of, hey, you got to get all your stuff together and go. You got to leave. You got to fill out new paperwork. I mean, this was crappy on the part of the University of Tennessee, and that's the mild term that I would use.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, you know, because I've already gotten the, what's the latest? What's the latest? And I'm not making fun of fans for being breathless with, what's the deal? The deal is, I think, is he's taking a step back, and North Carolina has reached out. Ole Miss has reached out. Others have reached out. I think he's taking a moment to assess, all right, not only what are my options, but what do I want to do? Let me catch my breath here. Let me get over what's happened a little bit. Let me absorb this and then move forward. So I can tell you that on Lawless. The fact that nothing has happened definitively in 72 hours is not indicative of anything other than just how crappy Tennessee was and what they did to him.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And, you know, North Carolina being an option kind of goes to show how much those past relationships with the Tennessee coaches who are on the staff at North Carolina now may or may not play into a role in his decision.
Let me take a break before we get to some other topics and tell you that today's show is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast, well, then listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, last few things. We talked about late additions to the roster, possibly. I keep hearing some rumblings, maybe a changing power structure in Mississippi high school recruits and such. What can you tell me on that without getting yourself in trouble?
Well, there's been quite a bit of that. I would say since right before I left for vacation, my phone started going off. I believe it was the night before. And I'm like, you know, what's going on here? And you've got kids flipping All-American games. And there's really been a flip kind of. Not just a flip in the All-American games, but kind of a flip in the power structure. I think the Under Armour people kind of pissed off some people. And in turn some of the people around Adidas and the brand and the All-American game there, which I think right now is sponsored by like American Family Insurance or something, they've been able to, even without the Army tag on there, they've been able to get several talented kids to flip games. And I don't think that's done in Mississippi. And I really do think that it might be a time for a non-Under Armour brand 7-on-7 team in Mississippi to be the premier one in the state, which is going to be interesting, especially when as many coaches that were on the staff with Mississippi Grind this past year, you know, Shea Hodge, you've got several of them there. Thompson at Starkville. You've got several there who are in prominent roles at the high school level to where they have the influence that some others may not have. Being able to do that and being able to, you know the kids and see the kids and to, you know, build the trust of the kids, that's something that possibly some other people may have lost in recent weeks or days even. And I think that it's going to come to a head either before the season or, you know, possibly before Labor Day. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on because there's no doubt that it's happening.
A lot of talk this week about the appeal to the NCAA. Ole Miss now waiting for word after the appeal. I guess that'll come sometime in the next, I don't know, It's the NCAA sometime between now and the end of time. I mean, you know, technically, I guess, like, there's like the year 3000. This will all finally end. If the unofficial visitors restriction sticks, what does it mean?
It means that Ole Miss is going to have to become pretty damn strategic in terms of when they bring kids in for visits,
Because you get one unofficial visit a year. Is that right?
One unofficial visit per prospect per year.
And then one unofficial and one official.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, obviously, only the current year gets the official visit.
Right.
But they're talking even 2021 kids can't take more than one unofficial visit per year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that I wouldn't call it crippling, but it's going to be a test of the strategy of the new recruiting department created by, you know, Tyler Siskey and everybody, being able to formulate a plan and understand how they're going to be able to get these kids on campus for these unofficial visits and make the progress that other schools can make in a process of like three or four visits in one trip. And being able to do that, being able to do it efficiently, and being able to time the official visits to where they're still not taking them for like the first game of the season. Like, you're not going to see any official visits for the home opener this year. That would be absurd.
If the appeal is still hanging out there on September the 8th.
Oh, you're going to see it.
Do they try to get everybody in at that point just in case it sticks?
Yes. You will see the most crowded sidelines you'll probably have ever seen at an Ole Miss game from a recruit standpoint at those games, especially if they're able to do that for the Alabama game.
And if it comes down before then, they start to parcel them out, figure it out. I mean,
it'll be a lot more – it'll be minimal, and you'll see – the top guys, maybe they'll probably save their unofficial, I would think, for the big game.
Is that a 1 year restriction, or is that for the next?
That's for multiple years.
That is a potential crippling thing.
Yeah, I think it's one of the craziest things I've ever seen the NCAA do. I don't even think they did that with USC, did they?
No, I don't know that there's, from what I've heard, there's no precedent on it at all.
That's insane.
To me, that's a much bigger deal from a program standpoint than whether you get to go to the Independence Bowl this year.
Right. I agree 100% because, you know, the hope of Ole Miss football is the future of the program. It's not the present. No offense to Greg Little, A.J. Brown, Jordan Tamu, or anybody on the roster. But the hope of the program and the future of Ole Miss football is on those sidelines on Saturdays. They're sitting there with their name tags on the nice little lanyards and stuff like that. That is the future of Ole Miss football. And risking that with, like you said, only getting one unofficial visit, you could see over 100 kids at that game on September 8th if the appeal hasn't been ruled on.
Next week, what's the plan?
We're hoping to get the guy who rates the state of Mississippi and is one of the national guys, and Chad Simmons. Get him on the soft verbal, get him on the Billy Pecan hotline, and kind of go from there. Talk about Mississippi, obviously talk about the influx of talent in the state of Georgia, especially from Buford High School, where it seems Ole Miss is recruiting the entire offensive line, and kind of just go from there. I might preview a little bit of the high school season coming up.
Okay.
Practice will be well underway. I'm going to Memphis today to see some high schools for the first time since the spring. So it's everything's getting going. Like you said, there's visitors this weekend. You know, seeing the visitors this weekend, I think they'll be Friday and Saturday, and then it'll kind of taper back off. But I think one of those off days is when you'll see Nakobe Dean possibly visit before the dead period begins again, which would be, let's see, the 31st. The MLB trade deadline
is Tuesday.
Tuesday. So,
yep.
So Wednesday, the dead period starts again. So there's not much time. And getting as many kids on campus as you can in that time is what Ole Miss plans to do.
How locked into the MLB trade deadline is Nakobe Dean? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. How locked into the MLB trade deadline are you?
Very. Very. I'm interested to see what the Braves are going to do. I mean, you've got this talent. You're a year ahead of time. You're making progress. You've kind of come, as you kind of put a little bit, kind of down to reality in terms of the inconsistencies.
Well, the regression monster was going to hit a little bit, but we're sitting here as we tape this. Atlanta is 54-44. They are, if the season ended today, they would travel to Milwaukee to play in the wild card game.
And who's starting in that game for either team? That's the scary part.
Well, Atlanta would go with Fulte.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. That's where it becomes interesting.
Who would you hand the ball to?
That's exactly. It's not Julio.
No. I would give it to Foltynewicz.
Yeah, I would give it to Fulte or, you know, possibly Newcomb, depending on the lineup the Brewers are putting out.
And I don't know who the Brewers would throw in that game. I think they would try to throw Guerra, who's been really good for them.
I mean, that's the thing that makes me – I don't know. I saw some proposed offers for Chris Archer, and I'm like, no, you can't give up that much for him. But at the same time, you need an ace. You could have used Jake Arrieta. You could have signed him to that same contract the Phillies did, and you'd probably be in a similar spot that you are in now, but you would have the veteran presence when struggles go by.
You know what's funny is if the season ended today, Atlanta and Milwaukee would play for the wild card. In fairness, Arizona's right there, a half game out. The Rockies are a game and a half out. Pittsburgh's 3.5 out. Giants are 4.5. Cardinals are 5. Washington's 5.5.
I'm ready to count out the Cardinals and the Nationals.
I think it's getting that time with the Nationals. The Nationals are 50-51 right now.
I'm calling teams and saying, hey, you know, do you sure you don't want Bryce Harper for 2 months?
They've already said they won't do it. They won't do it.
It's insane. That GM's going to cost himself his job.
Well, he got a new contract extension at the beginning of the year. He's living large. Philadelphia would play the Dodgers in a division series. The wild card winner would get the Cubs. There's not one team in the National League when I look at it today. We just mentioned of the teams that are realistically in it, Philly, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Brewers, the Braves, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies. I think it stops there. Not one of those teams, in my opinion, could beat an American League team in a 7-game series.
I don't think they could beat any of the top three in the American League. I don't think they could beat Cleveland in a 7-game series. I don't think they could beat Boston in a 7-game series. And I don't think they could beat New York. So even 4 if you count the Astros.
Yeah, the American League playoff scenario, if the season started today, the Mariners would travel to New York to play the Yankees. Oakland's right there, a game and a half out. Everybody else is done. If you're Tampa, the Angels, the Twins, those you're unloading. The American League Division Series, Cleveland and Houston would play.
Gosh, that would be.
I mean, imagine this American League playoff. Now, here's what's interesting. This is where a National League team could win. Sorry about that. My daughter sent me a text. You could get Yankees, Red Sox in a 5-game series where they would see if they could kill each other.
Yeah.
And you would get Cleveland, Houston in a 5-game series. I know everyone goes, well, Houston, automatic.
I disagree. 5-game
series, man. Yeah. You're going to get Kluber. You're going to get Bauer. You're going to get Kluber and Bauer again.
Kluber's been terrible in the past 3 weeks.
He got hit hard. Bauer's been really good.
Yeah, Bauer ended the Pirates winning streak, I'm sure, to much to your happiness.
I was relieved a little to see them finally lose a game. I mean, I was happy when they were sweeping the Brewers there for a while, but then I was like, okay, guys, enough.
Right. You know, yeah.
Reminder, you're the Pirates. Act like it. So that American League Championship Series, I mean, it's Boston or New York against probably Houston or Cleveland, likely Houston.
Yeah.
That's a 7-game series, man. They're killing each other. They're going through pins. There's a chance that the National League team on the other side not gets them in a letdown, but just gets them tired.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I look at the National League, and I don't see any of those teams that I just mentioned, the Phillies, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Brewers, the Braves, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, how those teams stack up with a Boston or a New York or a Houston. I don't think they do.
No.
All right, we'll be back next week. The trade deadline will be over. We can dissect what happened, what didn't. More specifically, we'll get hopefully Chad Simmons of Rivals.com on the program. We'll open up a mailbag. We'll get to some of your questions. There's your reset edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans for Russell Johnson. I'm Neil McCready. Talk to you next week. Take care.